The following is presented by the Cheeky Bastards.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and welcome to the seventh edition of Dropping a Bruce, the monthly podcast where we watch every single one of Bruce Willis's 40 direct-to-video releases from his acting career to see if he took a role for a paycheck and dropped a deuce, or if, in fact, he took the role and gave it his all and dropped a Bruce. I'm the notorious Scott K.
And from the United Kingdom, this is Steve.
And together, we will be your captains on this 40-month journey through the lesser-known movies of Mr. Bruce Willis's filmography. This month's stop is the 2015 action thriller, Extraction. Boom, boom, boom. Mr. Smith, we are re-recording. We have had the infamous bug that happens to all podcasts.
Well, yeah.
I forgot to record on the Church of Tarantino. We recorded our very first episode for Cheeky Bastards and re-recorded it because we didn't like it. And now I thought we're gonna make it through Bruce. Like, we got 40 episodes, we could do it. And we recorded this almost 2 months ago. This is gonna be the quickest edit I've ever had to do. Those of you listening to us, we are recording this 2 days before it drops. However, we recorded over a month ago, and something happened in translation where it got all janky and just really distorted and was terrible, and the two of us sounded like robots. Maybe it was, you know what? We got Bades, because we were when we did this, we were in the middle of Michael Bay. Yep.
Well, this is like the first, this is really the first technical issue.
Yeah,
we've had issues in the past.
The other was more of a human error. The other was just human issues.
Yeah, this is them fucking computers.
So we have recorded the next two episodes past this, and so we're redoing this. We are lucky, folks. You don't know how lucky we are. We get to re-talk about, this may be hyperbole for some of you, but we're talking about a film that may enter itself into the annals, not anals, although it did feel that way, into the annals of the spy thriller genre. It may dethrone the Bonds. It may dethrone the Mission Impossibles. And it may even bitch slap the Bournes. This is Extraction. Mr. Smith, how did you enjoy rewatching it as you decided to take on that Herculean effort? I went back to the notes, read my notes, refreshed myself, and remembered the amazing film we're about to get into that it was.
Yeah, because we get through so many movies. You know, you got to think with the Tarantino thing, with the Cheeky Bastards,
yes,
and this, and just our natural, you know, obsession with movies in general. You know, we get through so many films, and I was kind of, when you messaged me about having to re-record this one, I couldn't even remember what film it was. I was like, which one was that again? And then my heart sunk when I went on a Letterboxd to check it out again. So I will be honest with you, and I think I found this with quite a few of the Bruce Willis's. The second watch, you know, I think because you kind of know what you're getting this time, they're kind of less disappointing. You know, I found this an easier watch this time. And for now, that's all I'm really going to say, because I don't want to ruin things. I do tend to jump the gun. It's been known to happen. So, but all I'll say is, once you're familiarized, you kind of settle in. And
it's like it's like when you go to the proctologist for the first time and he slaps on that glove and he's lubing up and he's going to go in
run
and
your
check
fingers through his head,
and he's like, okay. He's like, all right, here it comes. You're like, whoa.
Hey.
Second time around, you go, hey, did I say one finger? Maybe this time you make it two, Doc. So that's
go a time.
Hey, let's get in there. Get in there and deep, my friend.
What
all right.
What do they have for dinner, huh? So I didn't find it quite, you know, I'm not going to say anymore because I'll jump
as invasive
the gun.
I'll jump the first time.
Yeah, I'm jumping the gun. Let's just get into this.
Well, before we disappoint our father, because we were too big a pussy to shoot the man who just killed our mother, it's time for our...
What you talking about, Willis?
It's the facts, man. Just the facts.
This film was released in 2015, written by Max Adams and Umar Aleem, and directed by Steven C. Miller, starring Kellan Lutz, Bruce Willis, Gina Carano, D.B. Sweeney, Tyler Olson, Lydia Hall, Dan Bilzerian, and Steve Coulter. With a running time of 83 minutes, it holds a 4.1 rating on IMDb and a 6 critic and 17 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. A former CIA operative is kidnapped by a group of terrorists. When his son learns that there is no plan for his father to be saved, he launches his own rescue operation. Lionsgate and Grindstone Entertainment Group presents Extraction.
My name is Leonard Turner. I am with the Central Intelligence Agency, and I have been taken hostage. In approximately 14 hours, they will have control over the world's telecommunications. If their demands are not met, all missile silos will be activated with coordinates set the continental United States.
Harry! Harry! It's your dad.
Sir, I want to be a part of this.
Your goal is to get your father back.
My goal is to protect the free world.
Those goals are one and the same.
We'll take it from here, Agent Turner.
Sir?
Go home, son.
Harry, sorry about the way this is going down.
Me too.
Sir, it just activated.
Asia, Europe, and South America lost communication.
They have a terrorist faction in the southeastern United States.
Where are the missile codes?
You tell me, and I walk on out of here.
I missed you too. So what's the plan?
Get inside.
And ask them where the codes are.
So you have no plan?
Works in the movies.
Take the shot!
Don't ever threaten my family.
So hard.
As I said on an episode that you did not hear because of technical difficulties, I will re-say, for our first 6 months, I was remiss in letting you know what movies Mr. Willis had appeared in. So I will catch us up from the time he started until now. So 08 was our first. So in 2008 to 2011, the theatrical releases that Mr. Willis had was What Happened from 08, Surrogates in 09, Cop Out, 2010, The Expendables in 2010, Red from 2010, The Black Mamba from 2011. In 2012, he was in Lay the Favorite, The Cold Light of Day, Moonrise Kingdom, Expendables 2, and The Amazing Looper. From 2013 to 2014, he was in A Good Day to Die Hard, which probably could have fallen into this group, G.I. Joe Retaliation, Red 2, and Sin City 2. And the only film that Mr. Willis appeared in 2015 that went into the theaters was Rock the Casbah. So, that's where he sits. That's where he currently sits.
The times, they were a-changing.
Yes, yes. We were headed towards the 34 straight to DVD releases and then 26 of them in a row. So that was what's coming down the pipeline after this. So, Mr. Willis in this film plays Leonard Turner, a salty dog of an undercover CIA operative whose cover was blown, resulting in the murder of his wife by a group of terrorists. Or possibly just car thieves. Really not exactly your bread and butter terrorist looking people.
No, not
look a little bit one. Like some extras from maybe Grand Theft Auto, maybe a side mission. Not exactly the main guys you go up against, but like a side mission, you gotta rob a car with a few people. Yeah, not exactly your tough guys. No. But to give you folks a little more depth in what we're dealing with here, when a long in the tooth CIA operative is kidnapped by terrorists, his son, a government analyst, sets out to rescue him, but to do so, he must evade skilled operatives and deadly assassins in this kindergarten Jason Bourne extraction.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it feels like we've already said this, we have. Now, all of Bruce's scenes were filmed in just one day, which we have come to find is going to be a standard thing as we get further down the line, is that all of his scenes, he seems to film a lot of times in one day. Now, in this film, he's actually in quite a few scenes, so that's actually quite impressive considering.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
We actually get a little bit of action from this. But the stunning fact that we've always talked about, I have an opinion. I believe that the piece of shit who we've talked about in the past episodes, who is the guy who has Steve's favorite thing, he has that train thing that comes out, like that, like CGI train as a part of, I think it's EMO is the name of their production company.
Yeah, it kind of lures you into thinking you're watching something really big budget.
I feel that whoever helps produce these, they are washing drug money, because this was made for $12 million. And it basically makes nothing back. So they've got to be washing drug money. It's the only thing I can think of.
Do you know what? That is insane. Pump these out. I've said before that they do tend to, it's kind of sketchy given the info on budget of these movies. Box office you can find because they can't control it, like I've said, but because it's made $1 million. Yeah. At the box.
You would think that if your movies are making anywhere from $8 to $10 million losses every time, how are you cranking them out at such a rate of speed? Only thing I think of is they're washing old money to get new money.
Let's just point out once again, 25 producers on this movie.
25 drug dealers.
Maybe.
25 people in the game.
So that's a lot of, you got to pay a lot of, that's
sex,
where a lot of that budget,
drug dealers.
We know that's where that budget is going.
Think about that. All that money for Bruce for one day. Yeah. At this point, Bruce Willis is a high-class prostitute. You're paying him how much for a day?
Do you know what? At this point, I can well imagine, A, he wasn't getting the roles. B, given his situation.
I think we talk about
this. Well, maybe in the future.
We're jumping the gun. Yeah. In the future. But yeah, there's a review or two coming up where I think we spotted
where the
aphasia has begun.
Yeah, so
that no one knew what it was, but maybe some people, I think that maybe why the rumor was going around that maybe he was just cashing in, or he was, you know, not putting in a performance. People thought maybe he was just taking the money, but I think in reality, the truth is he was starting to slip, and we will actually discuss it more in the future.
We'll get to that.
But I think that could be some of why we're doing one day and you're getting these borderline performances as we get further down, because
I guess it's kind of hard to turn down $1 million for a day's work.
Oh, neither one of us? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I can't begrudge the man for the money.
He's probably not getting the roles anyway at this point. You know, he's a bit, probably, dare I say, a bit of a has-been already. We know how Hollywood
works.
Well,
I mean, some of the movies I read to you, I mean, again, we're still mid-2010s, but he put out The Cop Out. We heard a lot about that and that. I mean, honestly, he started to phone it in, you know, in A Good Day to Die Hard when he's in Die Hard 5 or whatever.
We're talking about a series of flops.
I've actually seen better movies when I look back at it. I've seen better movies that we've gone through so far than A Good Day to Die Hard.
Definitely a couple coming up.
Yeah, so, you know, his...
We're on some sketchy ground already here, aren't we? We're starting to get towards what we can see is the issue.
And for those of you who are not American, as you do in America, you usually find a southern city to stand in for a major East Coast metropolitan. So Mobile, Alabama was standing in for Newark, New Jersey.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know, those of you who don't know, right across the Hudson River from Newark, New Jersey, is the skyline of New York City. And we don't ever see that. We don't even see a river, for that case, in this film. So, hey, I'm sure they gave away great tax credits down there in Mobile, Alabama. But most of these films that I have watched through this and my Nicolas Cage journey, a lot of southern states, Mississippi, Alabama, and New Orleans area of Louisiana, seem to give really good tax breaks, and people shoot really shitty movies in them. So shout out to the southern states for keeping it going.
Woo!
Now, on a positive note, this was a movie that allowed Bruce to do some fucking action finally. Like, we open up with an action scene. Now listen, it's not...
Well...
Let me preface this. Don't anyone think we're talking about Die Hard level action, all right? We're not. We're not talking about Die Hard level action. But comparatively to what we have seen to this point, and even since you and I are now two episodes ahead of the folks that we're talking to at the moment, because we recorded this in order and now it's out of order, we also know that this is probably some of the most action we've seen even up to the next few movies. I mean, we open the film with Bruce. We won't get into the fact that at one moment he's tied up with white zip ties, and when he breaks free, he's got black zip ties on, or vice versa, I forget, and he goes into his killing spree. But he opens the film, he has a weapon, and he actually does some action. So that, right out the gate, you gotta go, right, finally. Especially if any of you who are listening to us, as we unbelievably appreciate, on the last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, which means you're action fans. So if you have somehow decided to jump on board the train and have watched these films we've talked about, you know, as we're talking, if you watch this one, that yes, there is finally some action for Bruce Willis, who was hired for these films because he's an action star, and we have not given him most of the fucking action. Now, when I said that to you, the first time we talked about this, you agreed. But this time around, since you've seen it for a second time, you had a little bit more of a pause, almost as if, like, the second time you tasted a beer, you're like, that one does take like mule piss.
Yeah.
So what was the look?
No, I mean, we do get, one thing I can say for this movie is we do get an impressive intro with Bruce. He's there at the very beginning, so you're not just spending... You know, with a lot of these movies, you are twiddling your thumbs, so to speak, waiting for Bruce to show up. Whereas in this one, he's there from the get-go.
Yes.
And it's a fairly, you know, fairly exciting, like, little bit of action going on just to get you sort of lubed up. So, it's not a bad little scene.
I was excited.
I'll give you that.
He had his guns and he was shooting, he was killing people.
Well, I was more impressed with it this time than older, the first too. Time. I'd seen it, so you know, I was kind of like, yeah, actually, you know what, I'm in.
Yeah,
let's do this.
I was the same way because what was the film before this? I'm trying to remember. Oh, we did Vice, and we had Thomas Jane's neuroses, we didn't really have Bruce. Was more of a guy just standing around. So the last time we had him do any kind of action, it was that farcical one with Jason Patrick and the Christmas tree that we never talked about again.
The Prince. Yeah.
So last time we saw him, he was in The Prince, that he did some action, but it was fucking ridiculous. So
do you know what? One thing I've begun to notice about these movies is...
They all blend into one?
No. That's even too harsh by my standards, but... I think a lot of the trouble is, I mean, look, they're miscast. Like, if you switch the cast around a little bit, you could kind of, I'm not saying that's going to be much better.
Yeah, no.
A lot of the
time,
you think, you know what, that'd be a far more, Prince would have been a far more interesting movie if John Cusack would have been the lead and not Jason Patrick. And Jason Patrick would have maybe shown up to be the quirky guy. Do you know what I mean? You had people playing against type a little bit rather than kind of like everyone phoning it in and they all just seem to stick out, like I say.
They all feel tired.
Well, that's because they're doing the same like shit they've done forever. That's my point.
I know, but I think we're just middle-aged and they're just like, yeah.
Whatever, where's my fucking paycheck? You know, I get it. Exactly. I do get it, but with a lot of these movies, I just get the vibe. I just think, like, you know what?
Yeah.
You know, if that guy would have played this guy and diddle-a-diddle-a-doo, maybe that would have been a little bit quirkier and you'd have pricked up your ears a little bit and thought, you know. So... But anyway, that didn't happen. I'm in fantasy land where every movie is good. So I've got an answer for them all, you know.
Again, you get the beginning of, you know, we see Bruce, and then he's got to make a phone call, and his younger son, who will eventually be played by Kellan Lutz in older form, I don't know, somehow the terrorists are there to get him, and he calls his buddy at a bar, and then his son, and he watches his mom get killed on the porch, and then this fucking limp dick kid can't pull the trigger to kill the men who just killed his mom in front of him, and the kid who's acting in it doesn't seem all that upset the mom just got killed. I'm thinking she took his Game Boy or his iPad, and he's like, fuck that bitch.
Honest with you, I actually think that's one of the more realistic aspects,
Which, that he wasn't upset that she was dead?
He didn't just suddenly turn into fucking Jason Bourne once he grabbed his...
No, I know. But I feel
I know what you feel like.
No, I don't expect to be Jason Bourne.
I know you like to think, if that was me...
I feel like maybe you should just... You know, but
everyone's probably watching. If that was me, I would have fucking got that gun and killed that terrorist.
I'm not saying he should have picked up his gun and he shoots the guy dead between the eyes and blows him away and, like, all of a sudden he turns into Jason Bourne. I'm saying at least fire some shots at the person.
Well, no, in his defense...
Defend your own life.
In his defense, he didn't really get the chance because fucking D.B. Sweeney shows up out of nowhere and fucking shoots the guy.
Which, when we talked last time, I first saw that, said D.B. Sweeney's banging a mom. I said D.B. Sweeney is at that house
He's at the bar.
What are you talking about? He called him, and 2 seconds later, he's at the house quick. I'm just saying, I think he was at the bar right around the corner.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
I think D.B. Sweeney. He was here and then he was there.
What? If Bruce Willis would have called his son, and the son would have said, look, Mum can't come to the phone right now because D.B. Sweeney's balls deep right now and they're getting it on. That's one thing. But that's a different movie.
She'd be alive, but that's she wouldn't be alive, possibly.
You know, that's a good movie. That's a watchable movie. This, however, is not. But, you know, no, I actually found it.
Learning that Steve would like to see D.B. Sweeney deep in someone's mom.
I just want an action flick, is what I'm saying.
So she's taking his D&B and digging balls.
So I'm saying that the son not pulling the trigger is neither here nor there, really, because A, Yeah, he is a coward at that point, but he's like fucking 14 and he's never probably shot anyone before. I know it's America and everything, but maybe there is one person who hasn't shot someone before.
What happens is when you're born in America, the doctor slaps you on the ass, hands you a gun, you have to shoot somebody, or
that's not
how
even
abortions
funny.
Really happen. That's what they'll tell you.
That'd
we
be funny if it wasn't so fucking true. But the fact is, D.B. Sweeney bursts in, fucking swinging his fucking dick and. Fucking
Dick and Ball Sweeney shows up and
whacks this terrorist guy anyway. So, yeah, that's how we start proceedings with his son who's...
But I think you're skipping over the fact the son can't shoot is literally a plot point that starts
well,
the rest of this film.
I'm not skipping over that.
The fact he can't shoot
I'm
the gun...
I'm skipping over that.
From that moment.
I'm saying.
I just skip over it. I said the kid was a pussy, couldn't shoot. That is a key moment because he can't shoot.
But you just
it's
said
the whole reason
he should have done was
find
some shots. Well, no, if he would have done that, then
he
wouldn't
he
have to fucking...
Have.
That,
no,
that wouldn't,
I,
the plot wouldn't
I
work,
get it.
Would it?
What I'm saying is...
The plot wouldn't work.
We're treading into the weakness
no,
of, the,
mate,
of the plot. That's
the least
saying,
of this movie's fucking problems. Jesus Christ.
Well, first off, this is... At least it's not the Fabrizio's, but it's still two fuckwads. But the interesting thing is this is from Stephen C. Miller, who in 3 months from now, when you listen to us, he actually did a movie called Marauders that we may... we may feel a little bit different about. But yeah. So anywho, that's how this opens. And the one thing that we have said up to this point, and I think when we recorded this earlier, you enjoyed this, but they had some fucking amazing opening title sequences. Like, they were selling this as the next American James Bond. This is what this was going to be. Like, that title sequence rivaled some of the James Bond
ones.
And I was like, this is where the money's going to. The money's going to Bruce Willis and the title sequences. And then they're like, fuck the rest of it. We've
got
the most important
thing. Not only is the title sequence pretty awesome, the music was playing over it as well. Kind of really kind of 100%. You know, it's kind of like here we go.
You were grabbing good old glory, grabbing an American flag, and you were gonna fucking start.
Yeah, let's do this.
You're gonna have an eagle on one shoulder.
Yeah, because you had the bit at the beginning where Bruce Willis kicks all these guys' asses, shoots everyone. He does a John Cusack and stabs the main guy in the neck with a pen, and then actually says to him, "You look too stupid with that pen in your neck," which I thought was pretty cool as he's lying there bleeding out like a stuck pig. That was awesome. So then, as you pointed out, we get this awesome credit sequence, which is the animation is, like you pointed out, very reminiscent of James Bond. We've got this like pumping like score that's playing and you're just like, man, this one could actually be pretty fucking good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Could.
That's what you're thinking.
And then the title sequence end, and Twilight's very own Kellan Lutz appears on screen. And in the biggest, shameful use of a montage ever, which is a trope. And look, I'm a fan. We're 80s. I think the 80s really sold these. And maybe even late 70s with Rocky. It's the old, they're not just for training, but a lot of the montages we get that we remember are the training montages, right? There's always, oh, like Daniel's son, he couldn't fucking fight a fly. And then Mr. Miyagi gets a hold of him. And after a catchy 80s song and a couple of quick shots of him on the beach and training, he goes from weakling to, I'm ready to crane kick a motherfucker and win a karate tournament. So we get Kellan Lutz, who, when we first see him, is unable to not only shoot a gun, but he could barely punch a punching bag. And after a shitty techno-infused song that felt like it was in a gay club,
not that there's anything
Kellan
wrong with
Lutz
that.
Is suddenly goes from being Napoleon Dynamite to Jason Wick Bond in 3 minutes. And the sad thing is you could just tell from the way that even Kellan Lutz's physique is, this person's worked out before. You go, he's done some athletic things. We're trying to turn him in from, like, John Heder, the guy who plays Napoleon Dynamite. We want him to look like Napoleon Dynamite, but then become the physique of Kellan Lutz. So we have to pretend that Kellan Lutz can't throw punches and can't do anything. And then before you know it, he's like a kung fu artist. It was just so... And I think maybe the music made it even worse. It was just... I was like, what the fuck? I was like, maybe I should just skip back and rewatch the titles and just turn this movie off. And I have seen a great short film.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the first time I saw it, I didn't quite figure out that that's what was going on. Was that... right, there's a bit...
He was learning the ropes?
Seriously. I didn't quite figure out that he was learning the ropes in that sequence. I just thought he was crappy. Crappy. Like action hero. Well, no, because at the very first thing you see is him...
punching someone. Like, he's got gloves on.
What's that called?
Yeah, he's just punching.
When
the guy's
having a fucking...
Yeah. He's like boxing. Yeah, he's like shadow boxing with him. And I feel bad for the guy sitting there with him because he's just... It looks like a little kid throwing punches.
Yeah, they're having like a...
And
like, spar,
come on, Kellan, give
he's
us
like
a
with
more.
His sparring partner and he's got the pads on. And this Lutz guy is punching. But he's right. Here's the thing. He's punching really slow, right? Now, I thought that was just really bad slow motion. I don't know, maybe I was drunk. It happens, you know. But I was like, man, this slow motion is awful. But that turns out that he's trying to emulate the fact that, you know, he's trying to, like, show that he's not a fighter yet. Although he looks like a fucking brick shit house, do you know what I mean? He's fucking...
Yes, exactly.
He looks like he's chewed the furniture for a fucking living. So, like, yeah. But I didn't mind. I didn't mind the montage because it told us a story, man. D.B. Sweeney was kind of like the Miyagi, I think we'd agree. Yeah, because he's there.
Do it again.
You know, do it faster. Do this, do that, you know. So by the end, he's a killing machine.
I mean by the end of the movie.
I think you're being generous with the 3 minutes as well. That's probably more like maybe a minute and a half. In a minute and a half,
he's a schlubby fucking slow punching douchebag.
And by the end, he's a fucking killing machine. So you're like, right.
No, he's a killing douchebag. He's still a douchebag. Well, yeah. He didn't change.
He's a bit of a bozo, isn't he?
He is, but I'll give him credit because we've had some problems with some of these other people. But at least in this, he had the physique of it. The thing that sucks is that he had to pretend he couldn't do anything. Like, we could have had him be a decent puncher, and then he's clearly has had some training, and then we could have moved up to him now doing like more expert level, harder moves. We didn't have to have him look like he'd never punched a bag before, like he's got limp wrists and he's gonna break his wrist every punch, to then suddenly he's like kung fu master. Like, we could have had a progression that would have fit who he looks like.
Listen though, right? Listen up. These filmmakers, yes, though, are sorry, so deluded.
Professor Steve.
Right. They're so deluded, they think they've got an epic story to tell. So there's no time for that, okay?
You're right.
We've got a classic tale of espionage to get to.
They are making Bridge Over the River Kwai, and I forgot. Yeah,
exactly.
They've got time
for this montage shit. They've got an epic tale of espionage to get to. And all that stuff that makes sense would just merely slow everything down.
Yes, you're right. I apologize for bringing in... Whoa, come on. What the fucking asshole over here? I was just reading my notes, and my note was, what the fuck was that? First we get the lamest capture of a spy in film history, and then these two Olympic writers concoct an even lamer, hey, your dad was captured, fuck ass.
My note says, Bruce Willis gets kidnapped again. That's how it starts. We're barely 10 minutes into the movie, and he's been kidnapped again.
It's the weakest kidnapping ever. He's talking to a guy, another guy shows up, and then it's like, well, I got some kidnapped. Bruce doesn't put up a fight. Bruce doesn't pull a gun. It's just like one other guy shows up, and there's some bright lights. He goes, well, I got some captured. Like,
when he slaps his forehead and goes, don't.
And then, you know, I mean, the guy who's in this a lot, Olsen there?
Yeah.
He pops back up, and I remember from the last time we recorded this, he's the only guy who seems to actually be doing a job. Like, he's really
He knows what film he's in. He's the only one who knows
but he's overacting in this almost too much.
That's to make up for everyone who isn't acting at all.
He looks like he's just a computer analyst, and all of a sudden, he has more information than the rest of the people, and he goes running out to find him and tell him that his dad was captured. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And my next note was, these fuck asses have absolutely no idea how the fucking CIA works. Or even spies, for that matter. They've clearly never seen a Bond film, a Mission Impossible, Jason Bourne movie, or even a Spy vs. Spy Mad Magazine comic. I'm 20 minutes in, and I already want to kill everyone involved with this fucking film.
I think you're being a bit harsh.
But not really. I put this in for you, I know it. Kellen Lutz looks like Ryan Felipe in Setup. Changed my mind. However, he's the better action star. Looks like his appearance. I was like, oh, we could have switched these two guys.
He's just a fat Ryan Felipe, isn't he?
I think he's muscular, Ryan Felipe.
No, he's not.
But he's stockier because they don't ever
Hang on a minute. Are you saying Ryan Felipe is muscular?
No, right. Kellen Lutz.
That's what I'm saying. I just think, Ryan Felipe can act, though. This Lutz guy is a plank, is a fucking...
It's hard to fight
that. Well, no.
However, wouldn't you like to see them in a buddy cop?
There's films you like with Ryan Felipe in them, so... And he's not...
There's one.
There's more than one. What I'm saying is you're just not thinking. But this isn't about Ryan Felipe. Let's not go off track. I'm just saying this guy looks like a fat Ryan Felipe. That is all I'm saying. I'm not talking. If we want to bring fucking filmographies and awards into this, let's not bother. they both suck in the grand scheme of things.
True.
This Lutz dude is just a fucking...
He got lucky. He was a pretty boy and he was in the Twilight series, so I think he made a lot of money just based on being an extra
maybe,
in those fucking films.
But that's, you know...
Hey, look, sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you step in dog
he's
shit and there's
the
$50 bill in
the
there.
Gun, though, so, you know.
This is true.
So anyway, we're going off track. And
true.
A lot of that is my fault. So.
I think it's the only way to talk about this film and still enjoy ourselves.
Yeah, this is a yeah let's off just track. Go off track at every opportunity.
It's such a convoluted plot. It really, really is. So once Bruce gets kidnapped and they have some thing in a briefcase, which feels like a Pulp Fiction thing. I think that maybe what they
well,
find in Pulp Fiction
the
is a briefcase.
Is,
the MacGuffin,
is the,
yeah.
The Condor, which is...
The Condor, which makes
no
sense.
It's just the same thing as in the Mission Impossible, the latest Mission Impossible movie, isn't it? Where it's going to shut down all...
Yes.
Communications.
Oh, and, yes. But
and the electricity,
the
apparently.
Movie, the CGI they use for the actual, the computer graphics is so much better. This one looks like it's an Atari 2600.
Well, I think Mission Impossible has a little bit of a fucking benefit of having a $250 million budget.
I mean, they did spend 12. I mean, they came
listen,
with an amazing title sequence. We should have got the people with the title sequence to at least do something for this.
You're as deluded as this movie if you're going to compare this to fucking Mission Impossible in that
no,
way.
No, no, no.
Right?
I'm saying they had $12 million. We threw $1 million to Bruce. They could have spent even an extra $100 to get some kind of graphics. Even if it was just fucking Microsoft Office, they could have at least used that. We'd have been like, oh, look at this.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
And it's still in a suitcase. This is
no,
the 2010s. This isn't the 1980s. They're still using 1980s spy technology. It's in a suitcase or in a briefcase. This is
they're still doing that now, man. You where? You
it's on
watching,
a fucking flash drive. That's all it is. You're taking
you
a flash
even
drive.
Movies?
Plug it in. Bada bing, bada boom. I'm on. Fucking Steven C. Miller. However, I'll give him credit. I think four or five years down the road, he actually does a decent film with it we're going to talk about
what
in 3 months. He actually,
mean?
I'm talking
we'll
about
get to that.
2020's Die Hard 6. Let's get it.
So, yeah, Bruce Willis gets kidnapped again, as we've pointed out. And
his useless son, who, even though after 3 minutes is now a certified Jason Bourne, cannot get somehow signed to the field. He keeps failing some tests.
We don't know why at this point.
We don't
know
because when you watch it, he seems to have all his, you know, his shit in order. He can shoot like no one's business, and yet he still can't get fucking assigned anywhere. Somehow he's in Prague. He's in Prague after a very non-loving scene with his father at the grave of his mom. That should have been the moment in this film, like most films, where we understand why Kellan Lutz now needs to go and save his dad, right? Because
yeah.
It should have been that should have been the moment where we feel whatever it was, whether he has to prove to his dad that, you know, or make up for the fact that he feels like he got his mom killed or whatever. But we don't get any of it. We just kind of get this like Bruce is just like, oh, man, the best part of you, I probably jerked off the day before. If I hadn't shot the good stuff, I'd have got a good son. Like he is so unaffected by his son being there, doesn't give two shits. Like the kid's about to go to Prague in Czechoslovakia. He's about to be signed overseas, and his dad's just kind of like, yeah, I don't give a fuck. You know, like there's no emotion, there's no connection, and away he goes. It was like, oh, all right. And so away he goes. And then all of a sudden he goes on a one-man, I got to save my dad spree.
Yeah, but we are then introduced.
It's basically it.
We are then introduced to Miss Gina Carano.
Of the Mandalorian fame.
Well, as you pointed out, she was in Haywire, the Steven Soderbergh movie.
She was. I enjoyed that movie.
But she's done her fair share of stuff, but she is a fucking plank of wood.
Yes, she is a former UFC or MMA fighter. She's really good when she's like in the Steven Soderbergh movie, when she's allowed to do that
absolutely.
Stuff. But when it comes to acting, even same thing when she was in the Mandalorian and the Star Wars thing, like when she acts, but when she's, you know, she can do the physical stuff. She should go the route of Zoe Bell, except Zoe Bell can act somewhat. She should just do the stand. Like she's phenomenal as she would be a great action star or a great stunt woman. She's got the physique and the ability. There's no doubt about it. Like she's the toughest person on that in this film.
That's
like
yeah.
pound for pound, she would beat everyone up from the start. But yeah, like you said, she can't act and she can't be sexy for shit either. Might be because I guess if you train as an MMA fighter and it's always tough, you know, like you've got a lot of toughness to you. I doubt you practice trying to dress like sexy or come across as being sexy. But she's supposed to at certain points in this film, and it doesn't work.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's a point in this film where that she's in a strip club, and she has to seduce this guy. And I've written in my notes that Gina Carano has the sexual magnetism of a sock full of hamster vomit. She is, it is fucking...
Here's the thing. Somehow I know you've seen a sock full of hamster vomit because it's a very specific analogy you just made there, sir.
I'm a very specific person. You know that about me. I think things through sometimes.
We won't ask where the hamsters were before they vomited, so we'll just move along.
Richard Gere's asshole, apparently. Listen. She's terrible at acting sexy to the point where you're like, is this deliberate? I don't think it is. You know, where like she's out of her depth and like she can't, oh, they're gonna suss out who she is. It's not that. She's terrible. No. She's basically Kurt Russell in Tango and Cash when he dresses as that woman. Yeah. That's where it's spoofy and silly. She's like that just in real life.
Well, then there's a scene where she gets captured and then she's like, chained up by one handcuff because they couldn't afford two. I don't know. And then she like, I was just supposed to, I guess, seduce the guard to come over there. And then she fucks him up. But you're kind of like, neither of these things look like it should be happening.
It's bizarre. It's so bizarre. But so we're getting ahead of ourselves. But yeah, so basically, Lutz and Carano, they sort of team up to take down this.
Wait a minute, you're skipping a very important information. They used to.
Well, I was getting to that.
At the Academy.
That's revealed later.
Dun dun dun.
That's revealed.
But there's no sexual chemistry between either of them. I don't believe they fucked at all. I believe she may have fucked him. I don't think it's the other way around. I think he got paid.
Now that's a movie I'd watch. That's a movie I'd pay to watch.
That's a movie you're going to watch as soon as we're done recording.
I'm going to do more than watch it. Oh.
He's going to watch Simon Pegged.
Hey.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
Where's the Simon come from? These quips.
I know. Because I just, Simon Pegg.
This is some abstract quippage going on here, man.
Listen, this is the second time we've recorded this. I mean, I don't know what
you
want from me.
I don't think any podcast has used the phrase.
This is actually better than the first time, I think.
I don't think any podcast has ever used the phrase. Abstract quippage, but I'm making it
there
a thing.
There you go. With cheeky bastards. What do you expect?
Yeah, oh. So as you pointed out, yeah, like they've sort of like teamed up to find this Condor flash drive in this massive suitcase. She used to fuck him.
Yes, you got it correct.
So, I mean, you've gone past the bar fight, though, with the Hell's Angels.
I've also gone past the, I forgot.
Because that's where she comes into the movie.
Now, but did he already have the bathroom fight?
No, that's at the strip club.
I apologize. I forgot about the amazing bar fight that always happens
but
in America.
There's a scene where he goes to get some info for some Hell's Angels, and he kicks the fuck out of them all. At the end, Gina Carano has to save him, and that's where they...
Well, he starts to, and then the tables do turn on him.
That's what
I'm
saying. Yeah, he kicks everyone's ass. But
he
then,
didn't go all Jason Bourne.
He's getting the shit kicked out of him by 12 guys at the same time. Gina Carano bursts in, saves him. And this is where we find out their backstory and how in love they were. And basically, it just gets more inept from there.
Because it did remind me, then you said, I forgot about the fight scene. Then there's a fight scene at a bar later that night where they go to a strip bar. Look, the way they find out the information is absolutely kindergarten shit. It's just absolutely kindergarten writing. Absolutely makes no sense. Everyone's able to give up information. Everyone seems to know more things. Whatever. But they go to this bar, and while he's there, he's on the phone with DB, Dick and Ball Sweeney, is talking to him. And he says, I'm sorry. Mr. Olsen says this. He tells him, there's a hit put out on you. How he knows this, I think, is running the CIA. I think the real thing is, what we don't realize, is he's the real spy. We should have seen a movie with him.
He knows
more what's going on than any other character in the film, to include Bruce. Jason Lutz is in the bathroom looking in the mirror. He must have just janked one out. I don't know. He didn't pee or poo. He just went in there. He got one loose in a sock, and he's feeling good. And he gets the phone call, and he tells him, there's a hit out on you. As he says this, an Asian man is walked into the bathroom, gives him a look, and then goes into a stall. And it's that moment that Kellen Lutz has put together that this Asian man, who I have not seen and we have not seen before this and will not see after this, and we don't even know if he's actually there to kill him. If one of these two things happens, either Kellen Lutz does not like Asian people and did not like the look he gave him, or for some reason he knows that guy gave me a bad look, he's got to be the one killing me. I like the better that he's just a racist, because if he's the one killing him, he could have killed him right then. There was no need for him to then do subterfuge and pretend to go take a shit or whatever in the bathroom stall to start this Mission Impossible-esque fight that we would get, which was a good fight. It was probably the best fight in this film.
Absolutely.
But the coming together of events is absolutely asinine. Completely asinine. So either Ken Lutz did not like the way this Asian man looked at him and wanted to fight him just for that reason, or the Asian guy really was the killer but had no reason to go into the bathroom to wait to fight this guy. It made no fucking sense. No one can see this, but right now there's a door behind Steve. It would be like, I say, Steve, someone's there to kill you. And someone opens the door and looks at Steve and closes the door and then goes hide somewhere else in his house. He could kill Steve right now. Steve has no choice. If that door swings open, someone's got a gun, Steve is going to be killed in front of my eyes.
Well, I'm a little bit offended because... you've forgotten something very important. You've skipped past.
Oh, I'm. What did I skip? I apologize. What was it?
Gina Carano's friend, who they meet, who takes her.
I wanted to do the fight and then allow you her again, because this is the future love
of
your life.
This out. We can. You can do what you want.
It's good. I'm gonna tell you what, folks. The person he's about to announce, because that we can move past it, because it was a good fight scene from but it was a little.
That was a great scene.
It was Mission Impossible Fallout light in the fight scene. It's not as good as that, but it's weird because it's an Asian guy too. You're kind of like,
I doffed my cap to you, sir. That was a very.
But Mr. Lutz was good in this. And they didn't drag it out. It was a quick, a good one. A good brutal fight. It went well, and he was like, all right, that was pretty good. Now, Mr. Smith, one of two things is going to happen, folks. And I'm going to preface this now. So in a couple months when it's just the cheeky bastard because he's arrested or married and disappeared, the woman he's about to speak of was introduced to him in this film, and it sparked something inside of him. And he's been lucky since then. I think we've watched 3 or 4 consecutive films with her in them. I'm pretty sure he's going to stalk her, and she's either going to fall in love with him or have him arrested. But, ladies and gentlemen, the future Miss Steve Smith or plaintiff against Steve Smith is...
Miss Lydia Hull, playing the character of Chris. She is, I mean, look, she may very well fall in love with me, but she will eventually have me arrested anyway. But no, Gina Carano's old pal, this is weird, right? Because Carano is this ass-kicking, like, FBI agent, operative, fucking tough chick. And her best pal.
And it feels like when we meet them, that this is the first time that Gina has met her,
yes,
too.
Yes, but that's Gina Carano's fault. Don't be blaming Lydia Hull for any of this, okay?
No, I'm not. But it's like if you and I just started a podcast with never meeting, it was like they don't know each other at all. Like Gina, this is Lydia. You're acting together today. Like they didn't even try to build any chemistry, or that we would even believe they were best friends.
Yeah, so they need to get in. So basically, Lutz and Carano, they need to get into this club, this exclusive club, to find this sleazebag gangster guy. So basically, this is the guy that Gina Carano has got to try and seduce, which is the most awful thing you'll ever see. Probably the most horrifying thing you'll see this year. And we've got Halloween coming up, so that just goes to show.
So Extraction is kind of a horror film.
I tell you, it's pretty fucking scary and upsetting and disturbing. But the funny thing is, get them into this club, they go to Gina Carano's old pal. Who's this kind of, I don't know, freewheeling, footloose and fancy free gal.
Yet also feels like she's from the nunnery, right? At the same time, like, she has more sexual appeal to her when we meet her. She's like dressed skimpily, but yet she's also kind of like, don't you go getting fresh with my friend.
Oh, she's hot as fuck, man. That's my
lady. I know, but she's throwing all these weird
vibes
at us.
What are you talking about? but yeah, so Lydia Hull is Chris. Gina Carano, sort of bubble-headed, kind of footloose and fancy-free pal. Who just like, how the fuck did your paths meet for you to become close pals?
That's what I'm saying.
But Lydia Hull, she brings such levity to the movie because it's so dull.
She does. But she's in the wrong film, as you like to say. Like, she is in a 1980s, 1990s buddy romance comedy. She is playing it like she's in a buddy romance
comedy or something. Yeah, right.
And we're in this dull, dreadful spy film.
This film, everyone in it is so dull. Even Bruce Willis. Our boy Lutz is a fucking... the male version. He is a plank of wood, just as, you know, maybe they are made for each other, because Lutz and Carano, you know, they're like two planks of wood, basically. There is no, it's a humorless, ludicrous, implausible movie, and slap bang in the middle of it, we get introduced to Lydia Hull playing Chris, who's just this fantastic, funny, cute as fuck, like, chick who works in this, like, strip club type place. And like I say, she brings such levity to it all, and she's just like such a natural actress. And like you say, she's just in the wrong movie. She's probably thinking, Gina Carano, she did a movie with Steven Soderbergh. Lutz was from Twilight. I'm working a movie with Bruce fucking Willis. So she's bringing her A-game to a fucking Z-grade movie.
Yeah, exactly. She sticks like such a sore thumb.
No, she does.
And now that I realize it, because I wrote down, what the fuck is the purpose of this bitch in the Mustang? Because she is so... Here's the thing. There is a funny... Well, there's not a funny moment. They follow them from the club after Gina gets captured for like an hour through the desolate streets of Mobile, Alabama.
That goes on for quite a long time.
And the people... A long time. And the people have no idea they're being followed. It's the only vehicle. And then... So that should be comedy in itself, but it's not. And she's bringing levity. She just won't shut up. And he tells her to wait outside. She goes, you want me to come in? He goes, I want you to wait in the car. If I'm not in an hour, call this number. We'll get to the ending here, but skip ahead. If you think they don't succeed, let me tell you, it's a directed, they're succeeding. The villains never win in a direct-to-home movie. It's always the good guy's going to prevail. So when they come out to her, she's falling asleep in the car. And that should be a moment of levity, but they don't even play it that way. Like, her whole purpose was in case he didn't come out in an hour. She didn't call a phone number, and instead, she fell asleep in the car. That should have been a moment of levity at the end, like, ba-da-ba-da. Bam, bam, and then the credits. But it didn't. There was none of it. They all played it like... So she sticks out such a sore thumb that you're kind of like, why is she even here? I felt bad for her. She's in the
wrong
film.
Yeah, but she's awesome.
Like, she was, like you said, she thought in this great buddy slap comedy.
You know what? This is the naivety that I would have had as well, wouldn't you?
What about this? The way this movie's written, if this was a comedy, like a farcical comedy about spies, it would have been a better film. Like the movie A Spy with Jason Statham, where he makes fun of himself in the movie. Like, he's this great spy, and every time he does anything, he fucks it up. It would have been better. I think she was playing in that movie. She thought she was in that film, because she would have been fantastic in that movie.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? That like you said, she's in the wrong movie. But she thinks she's in the right movie. You know, this is the kind of deluded vibe we've got going on with this whole flick, really. But like I say, she's great in this. She's much needed, actually, when she comes into the movie. You're like, oh, thank fuck. Because she's, like I say, she's quirky. She's got the facial mannerisms. She's got the little quips and everything. And you're just like, oh, yeah. And she's hot as fuck. So that's awesome. Gina Carano gets zipped up in this sexy fucking...
I know. I would have rather seen Lydia Holmes.
This is what I'm saying. In these movies, people are in the wrong fucking roles. This is like...
the wrong fucking movies. They're not just in the wrong roles.
Dee Sweeney should play the dad. Bruce Willis should play the fucking CIA guys training him. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the CIA. One of the best people is the CIA guy who's actually running it. He's phenomenal.
So everyone's just in the wrong fucking part. That's like they've all played dress up. And that's like, oh, this jacket doesn't fit me. You put it on, basically. So you just left with this, like, everyone's just completely unbelievable, apart from Lydia Hall.
The way to best summarize it is the end is this, as we said, this important tech weapon is guarded in this building by the most minimal amount of people possible. However, I did write down that the terrorists have a very diverse hiring practice because every person that Kellan Lutz has to go and kill changes its race every person he gets killed.
Well, you know, this is
they
the
kill
rainbow.
A white man, they kill a black man, they kill a Hispanic man. Like, he goes through the United
the
Nations of people. That's pretty diverse hiring practices for Hollywood. Yeah. I was like, wow, this is
impressive.
Yeah, the
rainbow coalition of thugs. This is, you know.
And then at the end, there are more twists in the last 10 minutes of this film than an ice cream stand. It's unbelievable. Like, all of a sudden, none of this has been set up. All of a sudden, Bruce Willis may be a double agent. It's just like, what the fuck is happening? At the end, I was like, what?
However.
Like, M. Night Shyamalan was going, look, I do better than this.
I didn't know what was going on, but... This is where I felt Mr. Lutz kind of came into his own. He started kicking everyone's ass when he beats up all these terrorists and shit.
That's all he should have done.
But he did it with great aplomb.
How about this? Lydia Hall should have been Bruce Willis's daughter, and the person that plays Gina Carano's part should have been Kellan Lutz. Better film?
This is my
Enjoyed
point.
Enjoyed it more?
Thank you.
Thank you. We've done it. Steve and I will be making these films with these people. When AI has the technology, we will remake all these films.
We're going to have like a new section of this podcast, you know, called Fantasy Filmmaking, where we just change everything and make it an actual, you know, plausible movie. But when Lutz goes in at the end to this like warehouse air and starts fucking everyone up, I'm like, you know, we just needed more of this because he's selling it.
Yes.
He's pretty good.
Like we've talked about up to this point. For all these action films, very little action. Mm. Like these are sold in the trailers as action
absolutely.
movies. And at least the action movies that were B-rate and lower in the 80s and 90s had fucking ridiculous action. All of them, you go look at, like, even some of the ones that are on YouTube now that people make fun of, like, it's like Hawaii something, there's some movie, I forget what, but it's ridiculous, but there's action. It may be ridiculous action, but there's fucking action. There's tits, there's ass, there's action, something
happening.
Exploitation. And these movies, we don't get any of this.
This is the problem. They're too middle of the road, aren't they? They're too scared, really.
And
they want to get on as many streaming platforms as possible. So there's no tits. I mean, when you watch films on Netflix now, there's no sex scenes.
No, I know.
I'll give them. There's obviously like the odd anomaly, like Blonde or something, but they make something like that in a complete art house experience, it's an art piece. So it avoids any controversy. Whereas any sort of B movie type action flick, there's just no tits and ass.
No,
there's no gore.
There isn't any gore either.
You can have someone getting shot 60 times and then set on fire, but you can't have someone's head getting blown off from his fucking neck up.
Yeah,
like you used to get back in the day.
And that's the detriment, because if they could, they would actually do better, because they would become a cult classic and people would then actually go out and buy. Yeah. The physical copies, they couldn't see it streaming. They're so short-sighted.
Which
is the only reason I can figure that is that what they're doing is they're washing drug money. So that's my conclusion. What we get done with this, what I've realized about all the films Bruce is in, is he is helping, without him knowing it, he is helping to launder money from drug traffickers and sex trafficking.
That's what he's doing.
He doesn't know.
No, of course not. That's the oldest
trick. Because they're not making a profit.
Trick in the book,
Imagine the end of that scene where Gina's hung up and the guy's trying to, like, strip her and try to rape her, and she beats his ass naked. People are watching this film more. People are going crazy for this stuff. You want some of that tantalizing stuff for us to watch a movie that goes direct to video.
Yeah.
Not just because Bruce Willis is in it. I get that might get the overseas crowd, but especially America, we're so desensitized. We have people shooting at us in the mall. We've got to give us more. You know what I mean? Like we need nipples that shoot out fire.
You
would think, but we can't do it.
We're all desensitized, man.
We're known for violence.
It's not exclusive.
But we don't even do the violence.
It's not exclusive to Americans. We're all desensitized these days. So you think, what are you trying to shy away from?
I know. Well, because we go to the movies for the escape. We go to the movies for the escape of, like, we talk about on my Tarantino. I didn't walk out of Kill Bill and go, I got to go get a sword and start killing people. I was enthralled by that movie because of the cool stuff that was in it. You know, when Oren's chopping off heads and the blood spurting out in ways that doesn't happen, you're like, I'm in. This is awesome. This is what I went to the movies for. That's why horror movies in the 80s worked, even though their plots were terrible and even the acting was terrible. You didn't go for that. You went for the possible TNA you're going to see and the cool kills. And we get none of that so far in any of these goddamn films.
No, we really don't.
Does anyone know you're here? Did you follow protocol?
Dan, are you okay?
Harry, focus. Does anyone know you're here? No. No one knows you're here.
The last person I spoke to was Uncle Ken. I'm sorry, Dad. Fucked up.
No, listen. You did everything you could. We're fine. No one knows we're here. Just a minute. Sorry about all this, Harry.
What's going on, Dad?
Retaliation.
I don't understand.
Retaliation for your mother.
What's this got to do with Mom?
The CIA leaked my cover. The CIA gave up my cover. Cost me your mother. Almost cost me you.
He stole the condo.
What was your favorite scene, if you can recall? Or, you know, the great thing is, I don't know what it was last time, so this could be completely brand new to me. I'm learning this on the fly.
Okay, well, now I've watched it twice, I'm going to come clean. Initially, my favorite scene in this movie was the credit sequence.
Yes, that's right, it was. That's right.
But I've changed my mind. Okay. I'm lucky enough to have seen the film twice.
He's had the privilege, folks. The privilege to see this.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of stealing your thunder here a bit, because I thought the bathroom fight scene was the best scene.
That is also mine as well.
Well, no,
that was my original.
So you've stuck to your guns, you see. That was your first ever. That's what you said last time.
That's fine.
But I haven't seen it twice. I enjoyed it more this time, and I was a bit more into it. I kind of detested it the first time. But watching it again, I knew what to expect. I kind of bought the lead guy a bit more as a kind of like tough guy. And I was actually really impressed. Actually, I was really impressed with that fight scene. And I was really impressed with the end scenes where they're in the warehouse and he's kicking everyone. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of like split up. You know, they're like little vignettes of him just like beating someone over the head with a fucking pipe or something.
Yeah. You know, like Jason Bourne does for like 2/3 of the film. Of their films. They get into these grapples. Like, you have these long fight sequences with the James Bonds and this. And they're fun. But in these movies,
In this, they're kind of broken up, so they don't really constitute, really add up to a scene. But what I will add to it, though, is the bathroom scene in the nightclub with the Asian guy is fucking brutal, great, bit of, like, quick, you know, proper brutal fight scene. But then it spills out into the nightclub, too. And then you've got Lutz and Carano kicking everyone's ass. So I'm like expanding on it. And so actually, that whole fight was pretty cool. So yeah, the credit sequence is still awesome, though.
It is.
I'd be very suspicious of someone who didn't think that credit sequence was awesome. Yeah, you'd have to be a bit of a contrarian to disagree and say that's a shitty credit sequence. No, that's cool.
Yeah, I chose the bathroom scene the first time. I keep it this time. As you said, it's very...
to the point.
Yeah, it's economic filmmaking. Yes. And it's an economic fight sequence. It doesn't go too long. It feels like this is how long this fight should have, because of the brutality of it, should have lasted. Sometimes you watch movies where like a guy gets his face smashed off a porcelain toilet and you're like, he's not getting up and fighting. His face, bones in his face have just been shattered. He's not getting up, just, you know, shaking off with his shoulders, and they keep going, all right? He's not made of metal. So I appreciate a scene that can be very economical, as you like to say, and feel more realistic. And I appreciate it. And Lutz didn't have to do any kind of special moves. A lot of times we get some kind of special move from some of these movies. He just fought like a normal fighter, right? And he's quite adept at doing a fight scene.
To the point, quite just like, you know, I'm just going to have to... This guy's flipping... This Asian guy's kind of flipping around. But he's not like it's not like he's Jet Li.
No,
He's doing the occasional karate kick, whatnot. I think Lutz is kind of like, well, I can't do that shit, so I'm just going to have to rip.
Yeah. And I appreciate that he stayed with, like, I'm going to go just the body blows and the boxing that I know. Because most movies, they end up going like, all of a sudden, like, oh, no, I also know Kung Fu.
But
it's like The Matrix.
We spill
into
the nightclub, and Carano's like, well, excuse me, I actually can do this shit. So she starts fucking everyone up.
And she was actually really fighting I think.
She lost her shit.
Because
everyone was laughing at her trying to be sexy earlier.
Exactly.
Yeah, I may not be sexy, but I'm not going to fucking kill you all.
Best one-liner. Our best one-liners. Mine has not changed, and I do apologize. Last time I talked a little bit more about this man, actor Steve Coulter, who was absolutely fantastic as Prague Station Chief Theodore Citizen, because of how much more fun we had talking about the ridiculousness of this. But my quote from him is, okay, so for those of us who didn't grow up jerking off to some science magazine, can you please explain to me the significance of this latest revelation? I fucking love that. I loved it then. I still love it now. Mr. Citizen has given me a real bright spot. He was a bright spot in this film. I would have preferred to see more of him. But unfortunately, we don't get a lot of him. But that is my favorite one-liner. Mr. Smith. What is yours?
Mine is, at the end of the movie, when they all meet at the warehouse at the end for this, like, exchange of this MacGuffin with, like, millions of dollars.
The Condor.
Yeah, and they're going to sell it for $150 billion, quadrillion dollars.
$150 billion gajillion. Yeah,
something like that. We're introduced to the Russian villain who we have not seen or heard of ever.
I told you, more twists than an ice cream stand. All
like,
of a sudden,
so he comes on the screen like we should give a shit. Yeah. And we're like, who the fuck's this guy?
It'd have been great if it was Dolph Lundgren. That is
just
a fun
see again, you know, here's fantasy Ivan. Filmmaking, man. That's our new podcast, I'm telling you. Anyway, so he says to Bruce Willis, he said, so there's this exchange between him and Bruce Willis. And he goes, this place is like Russia, cold and wet. Bruce Willis says, it's good for the skin. That's what they say. And the Russian says, good skin is for hookers and potatoes. And Bruce Willis says, I hadn't really thought of it that way. So that's the level of depth we're getting here. This is Shakespeare, man.
But here's what happens. Every film, I feel like we have found that the reason the film gets made, just like Hudson Hawk, is for a couple of lines. Like, these are the lines. I don't know how we're going to make a film on this, but these are the lines
we
that need to be said, and we're going to fit them in.
This guy will produce this movie if we say what he's written on this napkin.
Exactly. Guess you won't be going to the Hair Convention.
Hey, oh, I got
this July, specifically this July. Oh my God!
I'm sure all you Bruce Willis fans know what line that movie is from. But anyway,
best performance.
And now your best performance from the film.
So my favorite performance in the film is by Miss Lydia Hull,
aka Miss Lydia Hall Smith. Yes. She will hyphenate it. Or will it be Smith Hall? It'll be Smith Hall. You're taking her name.
Man.
Steve Smith Hall.
Yeah, definitely. Lydia Hall as the character of Chris, who, to move further into our fantasy filmmaking league, how awesome, right? Think about this. How awesome would it have been if she was Lutz's sidekick instead of Karana?
How about this? If she was the daughter, it would make more sense why she wasn't able to do half the things that Kellan Lutz looks like he's physically able to do.
Yeah, or whatever way you want to do
she,
it.
If it had been the daughter, and then she's going to try to get her dad to,
because,
you know,
he's
kind of
like this stone-faced guy, and she's kind of...
Yeah, and then it makes sense that Lutz is the guy in the field, and that they banged each other in what's
exactly.
it called,
all
and then he's helping
sense.
Her out.
Yeah.
It does, 100%. And Lydia is far better, because now it can be a little more funny, because she doesn't have the skills. And so some of the things she gets lucked into,
exactly. like
it could be way better. And then when she does the striptease,
exactly, because he's like,
you're not even recording with me right now. Steve's left.
Lutz is kind of like the stone-faced guy, and she's this quippy girl, and together you've got a great team there. You know, just kick fucking Karana with a curb and leave her back. And
she could be the villain. Just do what she does. She's one of the villains.
Yeah, exactly. So she could be one of the villains.
Yeah, she could be more of like Terminator villain. They're sending her after them.
See, this is it. We're making our own movie.
We're already killing this. We're already fucking making this movie better in 3 seconds.
Exactly.
Well, my best performance, and I know we didn't talk about him much, and I do apologize. This is his podcast. I believe Bruce Willis up until this point hadn't been doing a lot in the last few films, but in this one, I really enjoyed him. He actually was really good in this. And we talked more about the farcical shit that happened, and we do apologize. This is called dropping a Bruce. But I felt Bruce Willis was really good. I knew it from the moment he started on scene. He should be playing a long in the tooth, dark, I've had enough of this shit type of CIA guy. He's actually playing the right part. He's actually playing it the right way. He finally gets to do fucking action. Look, he can't help the fucking ice cream stand of an ending that suddenly everything's a twist. And except for the ridiculous he got captured again moment, which I don't want to give away because it's such a great twist at the end, that we learn a little bit more. But I really enjoyed Bruce. I thought he was fantastic, even though when he got shot, that was a little weird. For me, the best performance was Bruce. The only person outside of some of our side characters who was in the right role was Bruce Willis. He's the only guy in the film that was cast properly. Everybody else, you shuffle up and we have a better movie. But Bruce, I was so excited the first time we saw this when it opens up and he breaks out of his chair and then he's killing people with knives and shooting people. I was like, fuck yeah. And I even liked the way he treated Kellan Lutz. I think the disdain on his face in that funeral scene or that graveyard scene was that he had to fucking share the screen with this cocksucker. I think that was, he was like this fucking
You may very well be right.
Favorite character.
All right, that moves us to our favorite character. And again, I am remiss again because the first recording had us talking a little bit more about both of these men. But the second time through, I remembered the farcicalness of this movie and we had a lot more fun, I feel, conversing about that. But my favorite character is Prog Station Chief Theodore Citizen from Steve Coulter. He was only in it briefly, but he felt like he was running a CIA station. He felt like he knew what the fuck was happening. And he was a bit of a sarcastic, I've been here for a long time. I work in the CIA. Don't give me some bullshit line. If you're jerking up the science magazine, you're younger. Give it to me layman's terms. We don't have time for me to decipher this shit. We got the fate of the world is hanging in the balance and you're fucking around over here. I loved him. And he was recently in some, he's been in a lot of big films. I can't remember him now because I looked him up before, but I'm not going to spend time doing that right now. So there you go. If you listen to it on a different timeline, if you're able to find a way to go to a parallel universe, you can hear the original recording because I'm sure that didn't get fucked up somewhere else. But here, check him out. If anything, just even for the fun, check out Chief Theodore Citizen, Steve Coulter. Fantastic. Who's your favorite character, sir?
Well, it's Chris, played by Lydia Hall. My girl.
I had
my
a feeling.
Main lady.
His lady. She's my lady. Ooh,
No, I just thought she was great. She was just like, every movie needs a character like this, and she just made everything work. Kind of like Thomas Jane in Vice, where that's like, well, I'm going to just throw myself into this because you paid for it, sort of thing. Not like, this is a piece of shit, so I'm not going to bother. You get a lot of that in these movies, where you're like, well, this is just a trashy fucking streaming movie. I can't be arsed. I can't be bothered to really show up. You know, and I think Thomas Jane pulled that up. And I think Lydia Hart, Chris, you know, best performance and the best character for me in a movie full of the most banal kind of straight-laced, humorless actors and actresses.
Yeah.
She's just like a ray of sunshine in the whole thing as an actress and what she does with the character. So, yeah, that's it for me. Best character is Chris.
All right. That brings us to the moment of truth.
The moment of truth.
Mr. Smith, did Mr. Willis drop a deuce with his performance, or did he resurrect himself from the last few moments and drop a Bruce?
This is very difficult, because I think he starts off really well, but by the end, a little bit meh. I hate the word meh, but I can't really... I'm too stupid to be eloquent.
That's good. Meh. Meh's a,
everyone knows. I'm just not. I'm
you
not
have to,
intelligent
you have to speak
enough
the same language.
Right, to elaborate, and that's just the way it is.
He's got Lydia Hall on his mind. He's fumbling around.
I'm in fantasy land of my own red now. But yeah, like when the movie starts, Bruce is firing on all cylinders. He grabs this fucking pen, stabs the villain in the neck with it, grabs a gun, starts fucking shooting the shit out of everyone. I'm like, this is my boy. Bruce is back. Here we go. And then he doesn't quite live up to that promise for the rest of the movie. But that intro is so cool. It's a Bruce.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
Bruce gives us a Bruce, you know. So it's kind of like 60% of his screen time is in that intro. And it's great. The other 40, very mundane. But the 60 wins, doesn't it?
Yeah, like you said, I think the opening and closing of this film for Bruce was fantastic. The middle stuff is just mired in the stupidity of the movie and the script. But that being said, this is the first film that we've watched that he was an action star in it. And he was actually playing a role that he should have been playing. This is the roles I've been expecting him to play, being the supporting character he's brought in. He's brought in for to be the villain, to be whatever, and he's going to be the guy who does most of the action, or at least get the cool action moments and some of the cool dialogue. He didn't get the cool dialogue in this, but he had the cool action beats in this for the most part. I mean, Kellen got some good ones, but for the most part, they gave Bruce what he could do. They didn't treat him like fucking Liam Neeson, who in a lot of his movies, he's trying to throw punches and he's old as time, and you're like, Jesus Christ. Like, you can see the punch coming before he even throws it. Like, you know, you're like, oh boy, he's not an action star anymore. They don't make Bruce do that. They let him use the weapons and all that. So I actually give him a Bruce as well. He was enjoyable in this. He was the only solid character who didn't feel out of place. He didn't do, as I've said before, a Wild Willis, trademarked by the Cheeky Bastards. He did not do any of that. He stayed straightforward. He played the role as he should have, and he got to do some fucking action. Finally. I'll be honest, when we started this journey, I thought we were going to see nothing but Bruce Willis doing action in shitty movies and be like, okay, you know what, the movie was shit, but Bruce at least did some action. We haven't had that the whole time. We have not had that, unfortunately. So it was refreshing to finally see Bruce Willis, an action icon, do some fucking action, which is why you put him on your fucking poster in the first place. Fucking idiots. Don't bring him into a film if you're not going to use him for what he does. What the fuck? Either let him be funny, like we did in Death of a High School President. Let him be funny, because he's got really good comedic timing and humor. Or let him be a badass and let him kill some people. That's all I'm here for. I don't need him to see him as a fucking boring, paper-pushing weirdo. Just don't fucking ruin it. But hopefully more will follow that line. But I don't have great feelings
for
that.
We'll see.
So, we both agree he has dropped a Bruce in this one.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
And now, I think we know the answer, but Mr. Smith, is this movie a Bruce or a fucking deuce?
This movie is a deuce.
This film most definitely dropped a deuce.
It's too implausible. You know, it straddles that line, doesn't it, being formulaic and implausible, where, you know, the whole ploy of Bruce Willis setting all this up, basically to avenge the murder of his wife, it's just too bonkers to consider.
Well, especially because they don't even fucking lay any breadcrumbs for it at all.
No, it's like, it's just a twist that, it's just such an out of nowhere twist that it's hard to even give a shit about it, really. You know, because bear in mind, we never actually see Bruce Willis's wife.
It's a silhouette of a woman shot who off got screen paid, probably an extra
at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah, she's outside. The curtains are down, or maybe you can see the curtains, but this woman just kind of gets shot. She's dark. She's not lit up, and she just falls onto the porch. And that's that.
See her blood hit the wall, and that's about it. So that feel, you don't get that feeling of like, yeah, she deserves, you know, you should have flashbacks, you know.
Or even that scene in the cemetery. Someone should be upset. Someone should be crying.
No one's crying.
Like, even the kid who played Kellan Lutz Young, he wasn't upset when she got killed. Like, you know, there was no like, oh my ma, none of that. Bruce didn't seem all that upset. She could have been hit by a bus. We didn't care. Like, that woman, once she was shot in the beginning, I didn't think about her another minute.
No, that's it. And then at the end, this was all set up to, in her, you know, honor her or whatever. I don't even know her fucking name unless I saw it on the gravestone. So, yeah, for me, this just falls way short, really. This is you can see the kind of film they're attempting to make, but they failed. So it has to be a deuce, you know. That's it. That's all I can really, all I'm going to say on the matter.
I, too, give this a deuce.
This film was definitely dropped a deuce.
However, like you, when it opens a bit, you go, okay. We're never going into any of these films knowing that what they are, thinking we're going to get a Die Hard or any of the level that we know from Willis's good films. So I don't go in with that being my barometer for a deuce or a Bruce.
No.
I don't go in with that, because that's unfair to these films and unfair to us to review them that way. I go into them going, is this going to be at least an enjoyable movie? I go, you know what? I don't know if I'd watch it, but I enjoyed sitting through this film. And there's a couple coming up that we know what I'm talking about. We kind of go, man, this is a B movie, but I had a good time watching this film. So when it starts, especially the roller coaster we've been on for the last few, Bruce is in action. You go, oh, okay, here we go. And then, like you said, that fucking opening title sequence, I'm like, all right, maybe this is going to surprise us. But that's it. That first 5 minutes after that, like you said, when you go back and rewatch it, it's funny. It becomes a funny, farcical look at the film. It's ridiculous. But that's not that was not the intent of the filmmakers. No. This is not a Hot Rod or a Napoleon Dynamite kind of comedy where the more you go back and watch it, the funnier you find things to be. This was not intentionally made that way. They did not want you to see this as fucking like Spaceballs or Airplane. They wanted you to think of this as Jason Bourne meets Mission Impossible. And it was neither. And it is a deuce. And for all the reasons we said, again, if you're watching this to see how Bruce does, as what this podcast is, then it's worth the watch to see at least Bruce. This is strange, but I feel like if you watch these out of the way we watch them, you're just going to miss out on either the progression or the regression of these films.
Yeah, chronological order is the way you got to do that.
Yeah, I think it is. Because as we go, you know, we're now kind of jumping out of sequence, but we were doing these in sequence. There's some coming down the road that, oh, okay, might be some bright spots. But I also know we got some dark spots coming back again, too. So it's just to see. And also, now that we know that Bruce has an illness, now we're seeing these in the back in the past. With this now information given to us, you can start to see where there's some slip. You can see some of it. You can see some of the regression in him.
There's going to be an element of the further along we get, there's going to be an element of morbid curiosity more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be kind and we'll be fair.
Yeah.
But we'll be honest.
Because I do believe it happens in the next time, our next film we talk about. It's where we first see it. We talk about it.
So
I remember it's coming crystal in my mind right now.
So, so there we go. You know.
Yeah. So we've got a Bruce for his acting. We've got a Deuce for the film, and we've now made 7. We have 33 to go. 33 more to go. Just under 3 years long time left. Our sentence here on Dropping a Bruce is slowly under 3 years. We're on the way home. We're gonna be on the way home sooner than later. Our trip to Assassin will be the final Bruce Willis film that we will tackle. So hopefully you'll stay with us, especially those of you who continue to support us on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast. We want to thank you, and we still want to thank Mr. Ryan Rebelkin for giving us the honor of bringing us on your network.
Thank you,
hopefully we are not a stain on it. Hopefully we are bright.
We're trying our best.
And that will do it for our 7th episode. Please feel free to reach out to us on the show's socials, which can be found in the show notes, and tell us what you thought about this film, how you feel about Bruce as an actor, or even to let us know what you think about the show. We'd also greatly appreciate it if you'd give the show a like, leave us a review, and follow the show on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, where you can find other amazing podcasts dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in our show notes. And be sure to check out our main show, The Cheeky Bastards Podcast. New episodes drop 2 weeks prior to Dropping a Bruce and are available wherever you get your podcast. So won't you please join us again next month as Steve and I will be reviewing Bruce's role in 2016's action thriller, Precious Cargo, to once again see if he dropped a deuce or if he dropped a Bruce. Until then.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.